Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 17th of March, 2023. I'm joined by Stelios.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the S-test that is Dylan Mulvaney, Canada's arresting frenzy, and real diversity has never been tried. A conversation about ethnicity I wanted to have for a long time about how the world works in the absence of ideology.
The ways of the world.
Yeah. Start off with the S-test. So, I'm saying this has to be an S-test, because Dylan Mulvaney's past has popped up. I don't know why people didn't find this sooner, but it has. And, yeah, it turns out he acted exactly the same when he was hashtag gay as he does now, when he's hashtag in girlhood.
No difference?
No, zero. It's comical, to say the least. We'll start off just by promoting the politics and philosophy of They Live on lotuseaters.com, because obviously it's just new lenses. I mean, for him personally, not to mention just societally. The fact that all of a sudden people are like, oh yeah, this is the new thing, which is going to do, because I'm a narcissist, so I'm going to get involved with this thing. And you can see it in him, personally. I think you can. We'll start off just also by mentioning that I'm bored of transgenderism, I don't know who isn't at this point.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, it just won't die. You can see here, like, Vox, this was published yesterday, Vox, still whining about J.K. Rowling. What's it been, like, a year and a half? Maybe 2 years?
They'll continue doing it.
I just scroll. I'm not going to read any of it because I just can't be bothered. Someone sat down and wrote this in the current age and was like, you know what, I'm going to write a million words about what J.K. Rowling's a bad person. Eh?
I wouldn't be surprised if this person has been paid a large sum of money.
I don't know what the rates are at Vox, but I can imagine they're small given the amount of money that gets pumped into them. But whatever. It's just still the sinking ship you're going to stick yourself to, huh? Well, we'll move to Dylan, because Dylan is the quintessential subject of discussion, especially amongst, let's say, the Americans at the moment, in regards to this conversation. This is one of the most recent videos that went viral because, it's Dylan saying you must normalize men having penises, demanding their women normalize the bulge. Let's play this cancer.
And normalize the bulge. We are normalizing the bulge. Women can have bulges, and that's okay. We're not gonna stare at their crotches while they're wearing their little shopping shorts at the mall. Oh, thank you. Love you. Bye.
Just yes. Why? Just why?
Cancer on the internet. Not uncommon on the internet, I think, to find such like terrible content as a side piece to any ideology. Just
to be honest, I find such material and torture Harry and Josh and Connor with it.
Yeah, but that's devious, but okay. Yeah. But the thing, looking at this, is I'm just, at this point, the whole character that Dylan wants you to believe, it must be an S-test, because I don't know what else to make of it anymore. And the cringe posting obviously doesn't stop from his account. You remember a couple of days ago, this blew up as well. I'm trying to avoid, but I just can't, apparently. You can see here that he went on some show where he gets invited on, and the woman hosting it, like, kneels down with him. And pretending
they're
sex.
Having a kneeling session.
Yeah, they then sat down on the carpet and talked about girlhood, and it's just really weird and cringy. Yeah. And it's okay. There's also more cringe posting on his TikTok. There's one where he like pretends to try and kiss the girl, and the girl is clearly like playing into the game, of course. Okay, more cringe. Just, okay. This is in between the surgery posting, of course, as well. Because, well, yeah, that's the other part. There's the part you don't put on the cameras, but yeah, Dylan did. She's like, I have to do all these things constantly so I can get what I desire, which is to be recognized as a woman. Which I'm going to do by force. Right. This, you know, cringe. Internet nonsense, right? But I think Matt Walsh is right when you point out that, you know, he's got like 10 million followers on TikTok. Let's just say 1,000 of them.
Yeah.
Kids who will go down the same path. Right. I mean, that's measurable damage. But I also love the fact that you'll spend ages, if you look up like women's circles talking about cosmetic surgery, they'll debate like the ethics and whether it's the right thing to do to have this surgery or that surgery. The smallest things that you could change to a woman, they're like, oh yeah, that's...
They have lots of free time.
Debating time.
Yeah, I think they have lots of free time. That's one of the issues.
But the cosmetic surgery in the other regard is just a non sequitur. Right, there, a whole other conversation. He also decided to host a party for himself recently, which I... Why? I mean, I don't. Do you?
I haven't had a party in ages.
No, but I mean like with cameras and a studio audience.
Well, if you don't have real friends, maybe you need that.
You need to buy them. This is Dylan Mulvaney celebrates 365 days of girlhood with a live show in New York. All right. Okay. The footage is really weird, in case you were expecting something else. It's mostly him whining about the Daily Wire, actually, which is probably why this popped back up. If you go to the next link, we can see that. In which he's there talking about how shad he is, that people don't agree that he's a woman. I mean, he screamed, normalize the bulge at them, and they just don't believe it.
Yeah.
That's the long last, yeah, bulge.
Well, that's life. Some people disagree with you, and fortunately, we still have the right to do so.
But if you hit watch again on that, because I want to... The audio is not important, but just to show people that he decides to pull out, and it's a compilation of Daily Wire clips that presumably, I don't think he's put it together. I don't think he has even the skill to just open Adobe. But here's someone's put together for him, in which you've got a whole list of pretty much everyone at Daily Wire. They're not even saying anything controversial. It's literally just, I don't believe you're a woman.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. That is the thing that rattles you. As you can see, yes, viewer discretion is advised.
Why is viewer discretion advised?
Because Matt Walsh says, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
And then Michael Knoll says, I don't believe it either. And then Ben Shapiro is like, you know what? Me too. I also don't believe it. Shocking. Shocking revelations. And then he sits around singing for some reason to the audience, which is cringe.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else you're expecting. I'm just looking at this event, wondering what it is.
Do you know the song?
Oh, I can't remember. I think it was Running Up That Hill. Something like that. Running Up The Hill of Girlhood. Which is not great optics, but whatever. Just cries about it for the cameras. And then people notice that, well, Dylan has a past, and you can Google it, and this is him on some TV show. I don't even know what. Was it, I guess, The Price? I don't know. American television. But let's just play this, because the point is that Dylan Girlhood is exactly the same as Dylan hashtag gay. And that's not even me inserting the hashtag there. That was his words. Let's play this.
Spin the wheel!
Yeah, you get to spin the wheel, but guess what? You get a second chance in this game first.
No way! Oh my god! Oh my god, I'm still in it!
So you know two prices already, which is a great thing. $3.99 and $5.99. Which one do you want to keep?
I'm going to keep the $5.99.
Keep $5.99. Something else up here is $5.99. You can tell me what it is. You get everything.
I'm going to say the soup.
Soup! $5.99. It's pretty fancy. It is. Yes! You got it! Dylan's a winner! Dylan's a winner! Dylan, nice job, man. Look at that. We're going to spin the wheel right after this. Don't go away, folks.
Has he been electrocuted or something? Do you know how much he won?
Hopefully $5.99. Hopefully he got the suit.
Look at the other guy behind who is waving.
You can tell the host away that what we do. Just let him go. Right. Just keeps going, huh?
Yeah, winning frenzy. What is he gonna do with that stick? I don't wanna watch.
American television, folks, but a whole other conversation. Point being, exactly the same.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed. Average camp man a few years ago is now girlhood. At least according to Dylan, because he hasn't changed anything. All that he's changed is now I wear a dress. Now I've done a bunch of surgeries. Aren't I a woman? But your mannerisms for what I think a girl is the overly ridiculous camp caricature.
Yeah.
Of what a girl is.
I mean, we have had these conversations numerous times, and I think everyone in the culture war has.
Yeah.
It's
just so funny to have it, because why did they invite you to the White House? Why did you decide this is going to be a champion for your cause, at least those who did that? And, well, they picked a very bad one, because, of course, he's got a past, and you can just view it. And
I mean, it is a feat to guess the soup. It's quite a... It's quite an achievement.
Skill.
Yeah.
It's not like...
Just choose, is it $3.99 or $5.99? It's one or the other.
It's and not then, like such shows and social media actually just attract narcissists like flies. People who want to be on the camera and that's really their existence. I think he's definitely one of them. I think all actors are, especially to a large extent. We'll get into his part of that as well. Matt Walsh noticed it, of course. Just so he knows how the performances of a girl is not the slightest bit different from the performances of a flamboyant gay man. Yeah. It's because this whole thing's an S-test. I'm telling you now. I don't know how else to view this at this point. Ugh. We'll go to the next one here because James Lindsay pointed out correctly something as well. The correct way to frame this is that Dylan has always been pathologically narcissistic and attention-seeking. So transitioning him, given those comorbidities, was medical malpractice, especially since he's acting as a role model to impressionable youth. Yeah, I think James is right.
Yeah.
It's just,
I mean, he usually gets things right, I think.
You can see the personality of Dylan from the stuff he makes publicly available, and it's the same. And do I think it's someone who's a narcissist? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously an act.
This is really weird.
I mean, if you saw someone and the camera wasn't on, who did like that?
Yeah. Look at the next one here, because his background is more than that. Ollie London pointed out that, well, he's one of those Book of Mormon performers. You've seen the intro? I've not watched the Book of Mormon, the whole thing. I've seen clips of it, the Book of Mormon boys who come out and do the songs.
And I haven't watched it, yeah.
The whole thing is kind of a bit camp. I mean, theater in general is camp, but the especially being a Book of Mormon boy who's there singing constantly. I do find it really funny that Ollie London's the one pointing this out. Do you remember Ollie London?
Yes.
People who don't. Ollie London decided he was transracial, trans-Korean. His pronouns were Core Ian. I don't know. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot dodgepole. But he detransitioned, realizing, hang on a minute, that was retarded. that was weird. And now spends his time pointing out things like this. This also, as he points out, refutes the claim, at least Dylan has made in interviews, that he came out as trans, age 4. Except he obviously didn't. Because right up until 2020, 2021, he was like, oh, I'm hashtag gay.
Yeah. And recently, just to add, two sentences. He recently talked about Juss Jennings, who supposedly came out as trans at age two, that she now feels that, or he, I think it was, I don't remember, that there has been some regret about the surgery.
Yeah.
Sorry if I got the...
I think it's this one here.
Yeah.
John's found it.
Yeah.
There's a whole other bunch of other stuff that Ollie has put out. Yeah. In regards to Dylan, though, I mean, it's just demonstrable. And what's weird is, like, Dylan's past isn't even hidden. It's on his TikTok account. Just no one went back and scrolled that far, because why would you? You see the first three videos, you just go, no, I'm moving on. But here you go. If you scroll back, you can find it. I mean, like, this is his Book of Mormon stuff, him posting, with hashtag gay at the bottom in his description. And it's not even a small thing that he would constantly be like, I'm gay.
Yeah.
You know, one of those guys? Remember that? Back in the day? Remember when being gay was something quirky? Not even slightly quirky anymore. Like, not even noticeable in the sense of, like...
The reaction behind of the woman who's behind him is funny. Not paying attention at all.
Yeah, just, okay. Actor doing actor things.
Yep.
I do that. What is it the ancient Greeks used to call actors?
Hypocrites.
But also prostitutes, I believe. Is that true?
I don't think so, but... Well, we'll have to check.
Maybe it's the Romans, then. I don't know. I know it was one of the ancient civilizations, just like, those people are basically prostitutes. But
I think it was hypocrites, but it didn't have the negative connotation then. It came afterwards.
Yeah. But if you scroll down to the description, you just have there just him being like, here's my hashtags, which is like hashtag gay, hashtag blah, blah, blah. That's not the right video, but whatever. We'll go to the next one because it's not just one. There's lots of what I'm going to call gay posting. Gays trying to enjoy nature, like, and then it's just him dancing.
Enjoying the weather.
Okay.
Celebrating the elements.
What a different time it was when that was considered interesting on social media.
Yeah.
And then it kind of wasn't, was it? In the 2020s, about then. It's not interesting in the slightest. And there was more gay posting. We'll go to the next one. Like a lot of gay posting. Here you are. The zookeeper said he refuses to mate with females, and I was like, sweetie, he's gay. Yeah, okay. Radio. Next one. There's just more as well. Brooklyn gays moving from the city to the country. This was his social media output. This was his, well, I'm just going to call it begging for attention, because it's what narcissistic people who use social media seem to do, which is upload stuff that will be like, pay attention to me. And his way of pay attention to me was, I'm a gay man in a weird situation.
Except in front of pigs.
In that example, yeah. But like, that had just long since become boring. The idea of, oh, gay guy in the countryside, ooh, that's interesting. No, it's dull as hell. We'll go to the next one here, though. Because then you can see the TV show footage as well is from his own account. There's way more of him being kind of strange on the TV show. And as he lists it, gayest contestant ever. This is his own words about himself. He literally played the role in his own public profile as, I'm the gay guy. Like a Family Guy sketch. The greased up deaf guy almost.
You know, I want to ask, what does that mean? I mean, how does he score the gayometer?
How does he get the gay points?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I think his solution was to go, ooh, and dance.
To go performative.
Yeah. To be ultra camp. But that was his idea of what gay is.
I thought of sexuality and gender have nothing to do with each other, which ties with what you said in the beginning.
But I don't think this guy thinks about that stuff in that way. He just wants to be attention.
Yeah,
and
obviously.
See the evidence. Because the thing is, he didn't go straight from I'm a gay man to I'm a girl now. Turns out that was a bit of a transition as well. I didn't notice before, last time we spoke about him. There's another video in here in which he says he's going from, there you are, as his Mormon days, to non-binary. There we are. That was 2020 to 2021.
Yeah.
He became non-binary. That means nothing. Literally means look at me, as Douglas Murray correctly pointed out. Also during lockdown. Weird. Weird how mental health works. He then came out as trans non-binary, which... I don't even know what that means. How do you transition to nothing? Whatever. Waste my time.
Most of these categories have no meaning. As you said, it is an S test.
It's look at me.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I need attention.
And then came the girlhood, the final thing there, being like, now I'm a girl. Yeah. I mean, this is why I think Dylan Mulvaney has made such an impact, in the sense of, he's a perfect example to use to be like, look, do you actually believe this? Because the whole thing comes off as an S test. And if someone is sincerely going to say they believe that Dylan is sincere in handing gender dysphoria and is transforming into girlhood, not womanhood, girlhood, whatever, then yeah, you'll believe anything. You will actually believe anything if you think that that is sincere. And looking at it, I am not in that belief. Lauren Southern did a video recently about something similar to this, where she was talking about shaming. And her video here was mostly talking about let's say the trans community at large. So she made the example of like when she was a political activist and she went and talked to leftists, if they had actually explained to her their positions and not just been weirdos, she might have actually got along with them in some way. But instead they were just like, no, fascist. She's like, okay, freaks. I'm a libertarian. Doesn't make sense. And so the conversation of, well, is this the case with Matt Walsh and such, who talk about the fact that like Dylan Mulvaney is ridiculous. I didn't end up agreeing. She actually did write at the saying at the end there, which is just like, no, if you just point out that something's not true, that's not shaming. As you say, I don't believe it. It just isn't the case. It's not the same as shaming an entire group of people.
That's what is very tiring. You cannot have a conversation with people who actually think that, you know, if you don't buy all their agenda and if you disagree with every single thing that they say, that this constitutes shaming. I think that this is, you know, that's not nice behavior. There are all sorts of ways we could describe it, but that's why all this thing is very tiring and I'm losing my patience. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I think especially when Matt was just like, this is like a human deepfake or whatever he said, like woman face. Yeah, that's not really him shaming the trans community or something like that. I'm also getting him just be like, this isn't true. Everyone knows this isn't true. I'm not wasting my time lying to myself, my family or my kids.
Yeah.
Never mind the audience. Like, this is just mad. Like, well, why would you say such things?
I mean, the frightening thing is to ask ourselves, why do we feel the pressure? I mean, I don't personally feel it, but why do the people at large feel the pressure to somehow go along with it and conform?
You mean the folks who will sit there and be like, Dylan Mulvaney is a woman?
Yes.
Society, ideology, relationships. I mean, I do find it funny. I mean, like, Lauren has had this herself, where it's like, once you change your ideological position, like a lot of your friends will just clink off, and then you realize they weren't friends, it's comrades. It's just like, oh, well, that's cringe. Grow up. People disagree with each other. But I think Lauren's video is a good one. I'm not having a go at her in case that's not coming across correctly. But yeah, sincerely, like any mockery of the situation that you could even get from looking at Dylan's video isn't, I think, mockery by even the hosts of the Daily Wire, as I've seen them speak about him. The mockery I get from that is Dylan's own actions are absurd.
Yeah.
Like, he is a self-mockery through his actions, and that's what makes you go...
I mean...
Even if you weren't watching, if you cut the hosts out of those videos, Like, Dylan's videos alone come across as mockery.
Yes. I mean, Noah, I don't think anyone would act this way if no one was present.
Nah.
It is just a look at me.
Good news, though, which is a lot of look at me is dying, which is nice. Yeah, you may have noticed this blew up. This is a show on Netflix for kids.
Oh, I saw this yesterday.
Yeah, this this child cow here talks to its parent cow and says it's non-binary and tells that it doesn't use he-sha pronouns.
What are he-sha pronouns?
He-sha. God damn, I am so sick of talking about pronouns. Yeah. Ruin my language. He-she pronouns. So instead it's non-binary, which I presume it uses it or they, because it's a multiple personality disorder situation. And the idea that you would show that to your kids, apparently that's being cut after people watched it and went, yeah, nah. You get the next link here. This is the news from the Daily Mail. Netflix quietly dumps kids show talking with a bison who comes out as non-binary to its grandpa. Yeah. Yeah, and I get in the trash. I mean, we spoke about this during the whatever podcast review.
Yeah.
Just the thing in general. And the fact that gender ideology has become like pure bimbo energy. About a year or two ago, I think we were at AA's conference, and someone there was talking about the fact, look, you don't actually need to worry that much about this aspect of the world, because it's already uncool.
Yeah.
It's just a downward slope from here. And I think now, a couple of years on, it's really gone down that slope.
It is, but do you think that this is a bit fatalistic and defeatist?
Do you mean in the sense that it's...
No, if we think that this is that the trends are irreversible.
I know, I think the trend that's irreversible is that gender ideology is ridiculous. Everyone knows it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but that's not a trend. Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous from day one.
Sure, sure, but it's recognized as such, and it's not really argued in sincerity anymore.
Yeah.
It's just taken as like, oh yeah, that's true.
You're supposed to go boo now.
I'm sure you've heard the story of, Václav Havel talking about his greengrocer.
Yeah.
Where there's this sign outside a greengrocer in Czechoslovakia that's like, glory to the workers. No one believes in it. No one looking at it believes in it. They just put it out because they have to at that point.
Yeah.
And I think we're in the very late stages of that in the West, where it's just like some companies still do this and pay the piper, but no human being who's sincere, not even those people in the studio audience at Dylan's girlhood party,
yeah,
I think actually believe it deep down. They're just sort of playing the role. And it's good to see that
individually they may disbelieve in it, but maybe they're afraid to say so in public.
I think so. But yeah. I think the S-test will die over time. And hopefully we get a Velvet Revolution out of the whole thing. But anyway, that's that. Move to Canada.
Okay. So we are going to talk about Calgary, which is a city that I have visited and I had a really good time there. And also about the Canadian government. That during the last years, the Canadian government has arrested many Canadians who have taken a stance on the culture war. Many of them are Christians, and almost all of them are explicitly anti-woke. Now, one of the persons who has talked about the stance that the Trudeau government has over free speech and over disagreement with the woke agenda is Jordan Peterson. Now, Jordan Peterson has very frequently talked about the importance of speaking out in public, speaking truth to power. And he's talking also about the notion of the logos as being a very central notion in Western civilization. Speaking of which, you can visit our website, and for only £5 a month, you can have access to all our premium content, such as the latest symposium videos called Logos and the Pre-Socratics, the discovery of the logos. Now, this is the contribution that Bo and I made on the discussion, because Jordan Peterson is very frequently focusing on the Judeo-Christian aspect of the logos. We are focusing on the ancient Greek developments of the idea. So, back to our topic. Let me give you just a timeline of recent events. Now, we have Derek Reimer, a 36-year-old pastor who is based in Alberta, Canada. And it seems that he is practicing in Calgary, which is one of the major cities in Alberta. I think Alberta's capital is Edmonton, not Calgary. Anyway, so Calgary has recently seen many events where we have drag queens reading stories to children. And I think that the initiative behind it is called Reading with Royalty. It's because it's supposed to be connected with queens and kings, in which case case, it is drag queens and drag kings who dress flamboyantly and invite...
You don't see any drag kings, do you?
I don't know, but I think I read this at some point that there are. Anyway, they dress flamboyantly, whether queens or kings or just queens, they invite children along and they read them stories. Now, the thing is that many conservatives and non-conservatives alike ask questions such as, why would anyone feel the need to dress in such a manner and attract, let's say, an audience of children in order to read them stories? What is it with the clothes? Why do some of them have to be dressed like demons or things like that?
You know what happens if you look up drag king?
Yeah?
First image result is a man in a three-piece suit with a top hat. No revealing nature to it. No sexualized aspect. Just...
Anyway. Okay, maybe it's...
I think that's why you don't see drag kings in these circumstances. Yeah.
Okay. So, why do we get the sense that these events seem to be sort of like therapy sessions for the people who read the books? And what are the events that what are the effects that these events have on children? Now, what is interesting to point at is that very frequently on the woke side, we are listening to to an appeal on the idea that harm has a psychological aspect into it, which in a way it's sensible, but they only look at one aspect of the picture. They don't look at the other question as whether this is genuinely harmful for children to participate in such events. Children may be unable to understand the harm that may be caused to them by doing so, and this is where parenting is required, and maybe progressive parenting is not the way forward. Anyway, this is a debate that many people need to have, and I would suggest parents who are flirting with progressive parenting to think twice, because no one is necessarily out to get them. There are genuine problems that need to be taken into account, and there are some issues that they need to take into account and see them through a non-ideological perspective. Now, the thing is that whatever goes in the minds of individual drag queens, let's say, it seems that these events contribute to children becoming habituated into thinking that it is sort of normal to be approached by strangers in, you know, in weird outfits who play nice and sort of go along with it. And this is something that personally I find a bit dangerous. Now, the thing is, February 25, Pastor Derek Reimer was protesting against a reading with royalty vent at, I think, Seton Library it was called. And he protested against the event. The thing is that, and we can have a look at the next video.
They should feel safe. There should never be an issue with safety.
A pastor who tried to stop a drag reading session for kids at the Seton Library last week has been charged by Calgary Police. Parents now questioning if these events are safe enough to attend with their kids. Police were called when protesters interrupted the library's Reading with Royalty event that was being presented by drag personalities to kids, when several protesters entered the room shouting homophobic words at the children and their parents. 36-year-old Pastor Derek Scott Reimer was arrested and charged with hate-motivated crime for causing a disturbance and one count of mischief. In addition, City of Calgary peace officers have charged Reimer with six counts of harassment under the public behavior bylaw. Police say the disturbance scared the children who were at the reading sessions. Now parents wonder if these events are still safe to bring their families.
So we have Pastor Derek Reimer. He was thrown out physically by three people. And the thing is that we don't have footage from what happened within this event. But the problem with the culture war and the phase that we are in currently is that we don't know exactly what all these terms are supposed to mean. So this person is accused of being harmful to children, of transphobia and homophobic slurs. Now, the thing is, there is also a political presentation of the event. But the thing is that we have reached a point where we don't know exactly what constitutes all these terms and what kinds of actions are supposed to constitute transphobia or homophobia, because the point is that you need to ask where you draw the line between something counts as homophobic or not, and whether something counts as transphobic or not. When we have people like the ones you mentioned before, who have basically zero tolerance to disagreement, and they portray every kind of different opinion as being a sort of attack on their humanity, it could mean anything. It could mean anything but accepting the woke agenda in its entirety.
I mean, that is how the law views it in the UK.
Yeah.
Why we get people arrested for ridiculous nonsense all the time.
So the thing is that after this, the pastor got arrested, and he was asked to basically... He was told that he's not permitted to have any contact with people from, let's say, the LGBTQ plus community, whether in person or through social media. And also he was not allowed to attend or be within 200 meters of an LGBTQ plus event, such as the Reading with Royalty. Now, he said that these restrictions did not go well with his conscience, and he thought that complying...
What if he's bisexual?
That's a good question.
I don't think they care. You're not allowed to associate with the other alphabets.
I don't think they care. It's, as you said before, an S test.
Yeah.
Yeah, a way to play divide and conquer and wreak havoc upon society. Now, the thing is that these restrictions did not bode well with his conscience, and he kept doing what he did. And we can look at the next video by Rebel News, where he is having a silent protest at Calgary City Hall. He's organizing a silent prayer. Let's watch it.
Here, grammar. Here, security officer with the City of Calgary has a trespass notice to serve you. You'll be trespassing for 30 days. Do you have any questions at this point? So that means you're going to have to leave City Hall itself right now. You can go out onto the sidewalk if you wish, or any public area.
May I ask, sir, why he is the only one that is being given a trespass notice, even though they are here collectively as a group?
I can't share that for privacy reasons right now. Sorry.
All right, Eric, I'll take this event too. On March 7th. We're also holding a creative entrance at the municipal complex interior without a permit. And today as well, you're holding a religious event inside the municipal building interior without a permit. You're being trespassed for 30 days. This is your trespass call from today. The appeal process is at the back, and you're more than welcome to appeal the process. Thank you. You can leave the building right now.
Does he seem terribly violent to you?
Horrifically.
He's just, you know, just...
He might murder three kids.
Zen mode. They're not going to be moved, not going to be bothered. He was just silently protesting. And that was in Calgary City Hall. And there's a question, I mean, why would you get something like that? Why would you get fined or told off for just being in your city hall? Just having a silent prayer, or, you know, just having a silent moment there in protesting something that takes place, some woke event there, such as Reading with Royalty events. Now, let's have a look on the next Twitter feed. There is someone who tries to possibly justify the police. He says, excuse me, not so fast. There's a thing that's called the permit. So if you're going to have a large group of organizing and gathering, whether it's public land or within some state, municipality or whatever, this city, like many others, may require you have a permit. So I can see how the police would give him a citation. I would certainly argue against it, because it's for religion purposes and they're peaceful. We're getting still a lot of cities, municipalities, and even counties requiring that you have a permit for a gathering, however small. Now, the thing is that I'm not familiar with the laws of Calgary and Alberta, but there is a curious double standard here. There are people who, on the one hand, feel that it is very much okay to allow woke ideologues question laws and say that, you know, they're unjust, but every time someone says that, well, maybe the laws that we have are very much pro-woke in some cases, and that's wrong, and we need to protest against them. Why does this person get fined, and instead of woke ideologues getting fined here or there when they protest openly against virtually every institution of Western society? Anyway, let's have a look at the first reply. I really liked it. It says, it's a public building that we pay for. If I want to go and say a prayer at the building that the taxpayers fund, I'm not going to go and ask permission to exercise my rights. Anyway, let's go to the next link and article. I think we can play this video mute on the background, and I'm going to read an article that was published in Fox News. So, a Canadian pastor was arrested for the second time in weeks after protesting drag queen story time for children at public libraries. Pastor Derek Reimer, 36, was arrested and charged Wednesday with one count of breaching a release order that prohibited him from being within 200 meters of events involving the LGBTQ community, a spokesperson for Calgary Police Service told Fox News Digital. Reimer had been previously arrested on March the 2nd following a February 25th incident during which three men physically tossed him out of Seton Library for protesting a Reading with Royalty event that was put on the Calgary Public Library and featured local drag performers reading to children. Reimer was charged with one count of causing a disturbance and one count of mischief, and also faces six counts of harassment under the city's bylaw governing public behavior. Each charge carries a penalty of up to $10,000 Canadian dollars and up to 6 months imprisonment if payment cannot be made, according to LiveWire Calgary. Footage of Reimer's most recent arrest are in a parking lot outside the Signal Hill Library in Calgary shows police cuffing him and dragging him across the asphalt before hauling him away in a police vehicle. I think that this is the footage we're looking at. Bystanders protested his treatment and questioned whether he had gotten within 200 meters of the event. He remains in prison and awaits a court appearance on Friday. The Calgary City Council on Tuesday revised a bylaw and introduced a new one in response to increased protests at drag events, according to the CBC. The modifications included adding the term intimidation to the current public behavior bylaw, and the new safe and inclusive access bylaw prohibits protests within 100 meters of a recreation facility or library entrance. Some councillors reportedly raised concerns about the speed with which the new bylaw was passed. Earlier this week, Reimer was also issued a 30-day trespass notice following a silent prayer session in the municipal building in protest of the new bylaw. That was a previous video we were having a look at. Mr. Reimer was warned on a previous occasion that he could not hold a religious event inside the municipal building unless he has a permit, a city spokesperson told the CBC. Pastor Arthur Palowski, who knows Reimer and made international headlines himself when he was repeatedly arrested for keeping his Calgary church open during the pandemic, told Fox News Digital that Reimer's arrests indicate the government's open hatred towards Christianity. Do you remember the footage of this pastor? He had a visit by the Canadian police with guns on his church, and he threw them out, screaming at them, you know, just leave.
Get lost.
Yeah. Everyone who is visible, everyone in Canada who is boldly proclaiming Christianity has become an open target, Palowski said. Open quotes. Calgary was immune for a little bit from the drag queen perversion, because that's what it is. It's a sick, twisted perversion, and you can quote me on that. Close quote, he said. Open quote. An adult man who dresses as a woman in a sexual manner and has the urge to do that in front of children is a pervert. End of story. Close quote. Since drag events involving children have begun proliferating in Calgary, Palowski said that Reimer decided he felt that God is calling him to expose that, to stand against that. He noted that Reimer has communicated with him from prison and that he is calling on Christians to rise up and vocally oppose what he described as perversion while they still can. Open quote. I've warned Canadians for a long time, and I'm warning Americans as well, that you will be ruled by what you tolerate. If you tolerate corruption, you will be ruled by corruption. If you tolerate perversion, you will eventually be ruled by perversion. Close quote. He added. So this is a very weird and convoluted story with many events. How does it seem so far?
It just seems like Canada becoming the UK. I mean, like, we have it now, so what is it? People who go to abortion clinics and pray in their heads get arrested?
It was the one in, I remember something you were showing last time in Scotland about an incident. Anyway, so let's go. What happened afterwards? So we can just have a look at the title and the image here. We have protests continuing in Calgary over change rooms and drag events. And if you see, we have people from both sides. We don't have, we have more people from the LGBTQ community side, but we have various groups of people protesting for or against these events. But the issue is how the Calgary City Council reacted, especially with the bylaws. Now, the thing is that there were some bylaws and they had to do with harassment and public behavior. So they were saying that, for instance, that acts like spitting or holding knives in public, they were to be prosecuted. But now they did something extra. They added the clause intimidation there. Now, let us have a look at this article. It says, Calgary City Council has updated the bylaw and brought in another to address escalating protests at drag events, including popular story times at public libraries. Mayor Jyoti Gondek said it's important for the council to send a message as cities around the world struggle with extreme polarization and threats of violence against some communities. This is not just isolated to Calgary. This is something that is happening globally, Mrs. Gondek told City Council during a debate on Tuesday. For us to take a leadership step here is quite important, especially when we are out there talking a good game about this is a city that you want to move to. This is a city that you want to bring your business to. And what she says is quite stunning. If you don't like the human rights argument, you should at least like the economic argument. You can be a thriving community if you're not inclusive. Now, I think we need to pause on this, and I want your opinion on this, because to my mind, the economic argument would go like this. An economically rational agent, in which case an employer or an investor, does not care about where the employee comes from, cares only about the employee's efficiency. That's the economic argument, at least to my mind. What do events such as reading with royalty have to do with economic growth and productivity? I cannot think anything that is good. The changes which were approved by a majority council members include adding the word intimidation to the harassment section of the existing public behavior bylaw. A second bylaw, which is called the Safe and Inclusive Access Bylaw, will immediately prohibit protests within 100 meters of an entrance to a recreation facility or library. Some councillors expressed concerns that they were moving too quickly, but others suggested it was important to take a stand against discrimination. Let us see what they said. This is important work. This is hard work, said Councillor Courtney Penner. These are hard conversations to have as a community, how we treat each other and how we respect each other, and we know the importance of upholding charter values. Ms. Penner said the bylaw will ensure that all Calgarians will be able to go to and from city facilities without the threat of harassment, intimidation, and violence. I don't see any discussion taking place, and it seems to me that all this is performative and that these people who say this, they're just, you know, classic politicians making claims about what they're doing is for the good of the community and for the good of all. But, you know, all of this is ultimately nonsense.
Just how do we further criminalize opposition to what we're doing?
Yeah.
And then whenever someone says, why are you doing that? It's like, oh, for safety.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's important to have a look at various cases that have our, you know, we hear every now and then. And let's just remember, for instance, that we have various Christians who have been persecuted, let's say. One is the case of Josh Alexander. If we can have a look on this link, I made a segment, I think it was February 24, on a Canadian student who was arrested. And basically, if you have a look at the case, it's really weird because this is a 16-year-old student who was just expressing in a Catholic school the idea that there are two genders, and also said that there were other classmates that told him that they are not really fond of the changes that the school is pushing forward when it comes to the bathroom issues. And he was suspended and he was arrested. We are looking at twice the case of Derek Reimer. And we also had also the case of Artur Pawlowski in 2021. And of course, we don't have just Christians. We have other people who maybe they say they're Christians, maybe they're agnostic. You know, who are explicitly anti-woke, who feel a kind of marginalization and pressure to conform with gender ideology. And I think that the thing is that it is an important question to ask a bit how woke ideology operates, because it operates, I would say, asymmetrically. It's on all fronts. Now, you did a segment yesterday on the person who could not define the word woke, yes?
Yep.
Okay, I think it is good if we start talking a bit about what woke means so we can get on the same page. I think that we were having a conversation with Connor yesterday, and he was saying that it's identity, basically identity politics socialism. And I think that it's important to have to shed light on two factors. One is the kind of mindset, the woke mindset, and the other is the two kinds of strategies that woke ideologues are using. And I think it is important to point out, because these strategies are not equally effective. Unfortunately, the concealed strategy works better in achieving the desired effects, desired not by me, desired by woke ideologues, than the overt one. Now, let us say one thing. I think that the woke mindset involves two dispositions, at least. One is the disposition to play identity politics and claim that disagreement with special treatment of the members of a particular group constitute an attack on their humanity. And the second thing is that the idea that they attack traditional institutions while taking their benefits for granted. Now, the thing is that that is why we see woke ideologues very frequently wanting to pose as liberators and emancipators of particular groups. Now, the thing is that there are two strategies. The one is the overt one that is explicitly against major traditional Western institutions such as the rule of law, the family. But there's also a more concealed sophistry. And this is working from within institutions in order to subvert them. And I think that the best way to show this is by clicking the next video. And it's more troubling and dangerous because it works incrementally. And most people think that it has an air of legitimacy because they use language that those who follow the overt strategy do not use. And they, for instance, use the language of individual rights in a way that the explicitly anti-individual rights woke rhetoric does not. Let us have a look at an old video.
Another blaring example, drag queen story time. It's happening in Canada and America, where some public schools and libraries invite drag queens, some dressed like horned demons, to read to young children.
And it's a social deconstructionist agenda. They're using children, little five-year-olds, to accomplish this. And parents are waking up and saying no.
When asked about parents' rights, OJ says,
well, actually, in Canada, parents' rights are limited and children's rights are put ahead. So the child has the right to be protected from the parents when the parents behave badly.
Okay.
Doesn't a child have a right to drag queens?
Exactly. Exactly. But I want to say something that if we focus on the phrasing, because I think it's important to look at the phrasing. This person said, in Canada, parents' rights are limited and children's rights are put ahead. So the child has a right to be protected from the parents when the parents behave badly. The thing is, in the abstract, this seems correct. And in the abstract, many people would agree. The problem is that we cannot just stay in the abstract. The question is, what counts as bad parent behavior? And that is where the problem with the woke ideology comes, is that they are trying to increase the kinds of actions that count as bad parent behavior. So That is why they are trying to attract an audience, and they want to tell to their audience that, no, listen, all of these things that you're experiencing, they are actually oppression against you. We know what your best interests are, better than your parents, better than yourself. Let us lead you to emancipation. Anyway, so the thing is that this is a concealed strategy that we need to focus on, because very frequently, those of us who deal with these issues, we are quite aware that this is obviously sophistry, but many people in public discussion, or those who just listen but do not participate very vehemently, they are a bit more prone to think that, well, this person uses language that we currently and usually use, maybe they have a point. It is important to pay attention to this. The problem is always in the details, and this is a way in which we can expose problems. Now, let us move to the next thing. This does not happen only in Canada. We have started having drag story hours sparking angry anti-LGBTQ rallies and resulting in several arrests. We have an article here by Forbes. I think the formulation of this article is very much pro-woke, but I'm not going to read the way that the top line is portrayed, but I want to say that there is a timeline of some of such arrests in other countries. So we have, let's say, I'll give some examples, not all of them. July 23, 2022, three were arrested in Boston, reportedly including the leader of local white supremacist group Nationalist Social Club, after about 20 men protested a story hour at the Loring Greenough House, shouting anti-LGBTQ slurs and taunting demonstrators who arrived in support of the event. July 28, 2022, a woman was arrested in Bristol, United Kingdom, on suspicion of assault as protesters disrupted a drag story hour at the Henley's Library, resulting in the event's postponement. August 25, 2022, two were arrested in Berkshire, UK, at separate story hour protests, one in Woodleigh and one in Wokingham. I'm not going to read all of them. If you want, you can just enter and have a look. But this is something that is going on, and maybe we will see more of these arrests, not only in Canada, but also in other countries. And hopefully this is not going to be, this is not going to continue. And as we said before, hopefully these trends can be reversed, and we can have societies that are a bit more serious. And another thing I want to end on a funny note, because I like being optimistic. Yesterday we saw, as you said, someone who could not define what woke is basically getting owned. I think that we have to respond by this video.
You talked about the importance of defining racism, but unless I missed it, which is possible, I didn't hear your personal definition. Is there one that you would offer us? Like, how do you define racism?
Sure. So racism, I would define it as a collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas.
I would define racism as racism.
Sure. A collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas. And anti-racism is pretty simple, using the same terms. Anti-racism is a collection of anti-racist policies leading to racial, anybody want to take a guess? Equity that are substantiated by anti-racist ideas.
I mean, the embarrassing part is he just has no shame. He's not even embarrassed in the slightest.
I think it is funny to watch, but it is also tragic, because I think this is Ibram Kendi. I may be wrong, but it seems to me that this is Ibram Kendi, who's one of the...
Somehow made a living doing this.
Who is one of the main people behind CRT, and especially the anti-racist doctrine that says that it is not enough to be non-racist. One should be actively anti-racist. And he has a very... He is purposefully changing the notion of what counts as racism to include progressively more actions. So I think that this is a good way to finish the segment and move forward to your segment.
Sure. I can't remember what the goddamn name was. Something about real diversity, yeah. So real diversity has never been tried.
Never?
No, not once.
This sounds a bit communist.
All of human history, turns out. And I don't really know where the segment's going, because this is really just something that's been on my mind for a while. I don't really know how to put into words, so sorry if it's a bit of a mess. Bit of a mess myself right now, because I've got a huge-ass ulcer on the back of my throat. But we'll go through it. We'll start off just with the fact that the census data proves Britain is not a nation of immigrants, being an article on overseas.com, which Carl proved just by looking at numbers. Numbers said something happened in the 1990s. We're still not sure as to exactly what. Still up for debate, but we'll find out. And, well, if we get the next one here, we can see this thread, in which a local man just writes hateful thoughts for a living, presumably. And he writes here with his graphic, just true diversity has never been tried, with four flags, being Lebanon, Yugoslavia, South Africa, and Papua New Guinea. And, well, I suppose we'll take a look, real quick, at the ethnic makeup in a map form of each one of these. I mean, there we have Papua, which is pretty goddamn diverse. I mean, these are graphed here as the different groups, and I don't know how much more diverse there is in the world. You want to go to the right for this one, that part, that side of the island. But it's just, okay, I mean, there's a next level diversity right there. Presumably, they're the strongest human beings on planet. Superpower by 2030, or was it 2020? I can't remember which one India was shouting about. We'll get to Lebanon as well. Slightly different there. We had to use a religious map because, well, the ethnic data has become a bit weird. But one of the weird things, if you talk to demographers, is very often in parts of the world, you'll find that religion, people will answer that as their ethnicity.
Yep.
Like in Serbia, you ask someone what ethnicity you are, and they're so Orthodox. Serb. Okay, right. That's how that works. You can see here, again, amazing diversity, Lebanon. I don't know, maybe a rising power in the coming age, which should already be a risen power.
Isn't diversity their strength?
Exactly. Not Hamas.
But has it been tried, really? Well, has it been tried?
South Africa is another example of it's been tried. Here, there's a bit more homogeneity. Really, it's just a divide between the East and the West, looking at it. The red there is meant to be, I believe that's the black Bantu population, and then the blue is what's listed as coloured in South African demographics. These are people who are racially mixed in some regard. And then, like, the whites are very small groups around there. Most of them obviously left at this point. Yugoslavia, another funny one, where you can see absolute strength, peak strength, in fact, because there is so much of a crossover, nothing would ever go wrong. Ever. Yeah, I mean, Yugoslavia ended in a really, really disgusting way because of this. Let's be frank. Because, yeah, you want Slovenia to go independent? Sure. Pretty much homogeneous. In which case, we can cut off some borders.
Yeah, that was Slovenes a bad chapter. Leave. Yes, and it's weird because many people say that now the war in Ukraine is the first war after World War II in Europe. That was a war.
Yeah, there were multiple
in the Balkans. Yeah,
as well.
Yes,
but the big thing there being like, okay, well, the Croatians are going to get independence. Well, where do we draw the border?
The thing is here, diversity was not strength,
and even worse with Bosnia, with peak diversity of the republics. Yeah. Which, for people who don't know, it's somewhere in the middle there, in between all the red, blue, and I can't remember what colour they used for the Muslim Bosniaks. But, yeah, not easy to draw a border. In which case, if you have war, in which ethnic groups want independence, going to be some war there. Because the thing is, the natural will of ethnic groups, I believe, just looking at this, and just some of my travelling as well, is that ethnic groups will eventually seek autonomy within any nation. And eventually, or seemingly at least desired, for independence.
I mean, the borders are exactly where you show the will to defend them. And when we have a situation like that, it's basically chaos.
But there are many like versions of states that we've had in human history. And the funniest ones from the 20th century are all about ideology. Like, oh, we're all together in this country. Why? Because I've had a big brain thought. And you'll have either liberalism being the main one. I mean, the United States still officially runs on that. The idea that, oh, no, the reason the United States exists, its founding principles, are because of ideological reasons, not because of any ethnic characteristic, which is really weird, because obviously they always were an ethnic group, the damn Yankees. And then in the modern age, they're trying to destroy that reality in some kind of sacrifice to the ideological worldview. The United States isn't really any group. It's an idea. And it's like, yeah, you can keep saying that. Yeah, it is in your constitution, but it's not really true looking at you guys. And the fact that you're doing that to your sides is weird. And you get the similar version, of course, in the USSR. They're just like, oh, the reason we're all together, communism. Okay, cool. What happens when that goes away, though?
Problem.
Well, ethnic groups start declaring their states. We'll get to that in a minute. One of the main criticisms, of course, in regards to this is Africa. Have you looked at a map of Africa, ethnic groups? They've overlaid the borders they have, of course, there, in the black lines. Then the ethnic groups are every single blob. Okay. You know, you get people who honestly say, oh, the Europeans did a terrible job in Africa. They draw terrible borders. Redraw them. Go on, redraw them. Make everyone happy. Good luck.
This is just ranting. It's it's people who constantly say, you know, the law is arbitrary when it says that you should drive at age 16, age 18. Why 18 rather than 17 or 19? I mean, the law has to be arbitrary in some respects because otherwise you don't have a law. And the same applies here in drawing borders.
I mean, you could draw one for each group. You're just going to end up with such a mess and a probably massive amount of war as a result. So, yeah. But the thing being that, well, why is there so much conflict in Africa? Well, a lot of it is ethnic. I mean, this is just, especially in the post-colonial period. Like, you can look up the various wars and Israel's backing of both sides, which is still funny to me. Do you know about that or not? In Nigeria, there was some independence movement in the south.
Enlighten me.
The Israelis funded both sides. I just love it when you go on Wikipedia and like you read the combatants and the supporters and just Israel's on both sides for the whole war. It's just like, how did you get away?
I think they want to be with a winner.
It's it really is 5D chess.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's the main criticism on African borders you'll find, endlessly. But speaking of the USSR earlier, about the fact that what happens when the ideology just disappears? Well, ethnic groups. Endlessly. This is something I haven't really thought about, but then I've been paying a bit of attention to this, thinking about it a bit. And you can look up just the various conflicts or weird republics that were declared in the post-Soviet period in that part of the world. They're all on ethnic lines. And pretty much all of them. There is one exemption that we'll get to in a minute. But again, just them responding with ideology, in that case being Islam. But we'll start off with places you've never heard of, groups you've never heard of, and why would you? I don't even know how you say that. Gagutz?
What's that?
Giz? G. I'm going with G. The Gu Republic. This is in, I believe this is in Moldova. We've got Transnistria next to them as well. They declare their independence for a short while before dissolving.
Geography lessons by Callum.
But it's a small ethnic group. That's why they declared their independence. That was the basis.
Yeah.
It was like, well, we as an ethnic group want our autonomy, if not independence. And the next one here, this is somewhere, I believe this is in Tajikistan or something. Do you know how to say that?
Karakalpakstan.
Way better than me.
Yeah.
Who's heard of them? Ever? Why would you?
It's in Uzbekistan, yeah.
But the point being, another ethnic group there that just wanted their independence in the post-Soviet period, been put in Uzbekistan, I think not, and then going for autonomy or independence and had their little conflict there as well. And then the next one, I think, is...
Ingushetia.
Way better than me again.
I think I've heard this.
Yeah, that's a republic in the Russian Federation still.
Yeah.
And the funniest part being, I love how... So the south of Russia... The Caucasus is always referred to in the English language whenever someone does like a video traveling there or something. They're like, oh, it's the Wild West of Russia. And I just sit there and think, why? Why is it the Wild West of Russia?
Do they have Mexican standoffs there?
Something? No, it's because there's a huge amount of ethnic minorities who want either autonomy or independence. That's why there's so many republics down there. And, well, how do you get independence?
Yeah.
So that's why it became the shooting grounds. And the obvious exemption being, at least from the post-Soviet period, Islam. It's just like, okay, yeah, communism's dead. You know what? Allahu Akbar. That's our basis for our movement. Why we're going to have a state. Because, well, Allahu Akbar. And then we go back to the article itself. Just looking at what he deets in his thread I was mentioning earlier. He mentions Lebanon here. I'm not actually familiar with Lebanon's history, so I'm not going to say much. I'm just going to say what he said here. And I'm sure people can correct what it was wrong. He mentioned here it was one of the wealthiest countries in the Middle East when it had strict laws on repression in government. When demographics changed due to a large influx of Palestinian refugees, it fell into civil war and today suffers corruption, hyperinflation, blackouts, terrorism in a lot of it. Don't even want to get into that, but whatever. He then goes on to mention Tibet as an example, which, yeah, I mean, why do we call what's happening in Tibet ethnic cleansing and bad? Well, it's because they're an ethnic group. And in which case they have the right to self-determination. And, well, they didn't want to be part of China. They moved in. And the destruction of that ethnic group is apparently bad. Only in Tibet. Only in foreign lands does the Western world suddenly think that ethnic cleansing is bad for some reason. And the main avenue of that happening here, as detailed by the CCP, is just mass migration. What if we moved loads and loads of Han Chinese in to the point that the Tibetans become a massive minority and then sort of disappear into the ashes of history? There's also just a lot of other messes he mentions. I don't know if you could just scroll through this. I mean, Yugoslavia is... don't want to get into it. Yeah, did you know ethnic borderlands that you can't draw are going to end up with everyone killing each other? Yeah. I mean, do you know in Central Asia, you know the really weird borders they have?
Yeah.
Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan, where they take the piss. The reason for that is because Stalin knew this fact of humanity. Like, the reason for the mass transportation and the weirdness of the borders was to try and make it as impossible as he possibly could for them to actually obtain any kind of national movement that would lead to independence.
Yeah. And I want to say, to add another dimension into what you're saying, I think that if we bear in mind this, the heterogeneity of groups in particular regions and where this has resulted, such as in old Yugoslavia, we will start thinking of the demographic problem we face in the West a bit more seriously.
Just the idea that it's going to have no effects, trust me. It'll be a rainbow paradise. It's like,
yeah, it's not going to be a rainbow paradise.
I
think serious predictions go about telling us that the resulting things are not going to be very, very tolerant.
No. I mean,
if the current demographic trends are not reversed.
So he lists a whole bunch more here. He goes through South Africa, Iraq, Burma, Liberia, which are all success stories.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Who doesn't want to live there? And it's just deets of, well, another diversity success story because they tried this. And I mean, Iraq's the really funny one. I love that. Just the American. There's a funny story I heard actually where this, I can't remember who he was a Marine or something. And he was saying when he was in Iraq, they had to write some logbook and say what they'd been up to. And he's like, I don't have anything to write in there.
Yeah.
He's like, just write something. It's your job. Do it. We got to send it off. So he sits around for a while and he thinks, what am I going to write? Because someone is going to read this. So he wrote in the logbook, sir, why the United States, a presidential republic, do we go around the world setting up parliamentary republics? Because that's what they did in Iraq. He just got shouted at in the end.
Yeah.
But the weirdness being of like, oh yeah, we'll just serve democracy and all go fine. It's like, no, we get factional infighting between different groups. Fantastic. So it's almost like these things were important and should have been taken into account, but whatever. There's the messes. And then the actual stories of diversity, well, diverse places being a huge success, he details in here just, well, how do you do that? If you go to the next link, he mentions, for example, Switzerland is federalized, has close to a homogenous population ethnically and formed in particular historical circumstances. Of course, they have their divides between the Italians, the French, and the Germans speaking Swiss, which I'm not going to call Germans because mountain Germans are weird. You know about that?
No, I don't know about their
weirdness. You got like the mountain Germans?
Yeah.
Then you got the Germans, and then you got swamp Germans. You know what the swamp Germans are?
No.
Dutch. They live in swamps.
They always say that people in mountains, and I have some origin from the mountains, let's say, that we're a bit crazy in some cases.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's a universal norm. Like the mountain folk are always far more...
unruly.
Yeah, they're actually able to maintain their independence. Because what are you going to do? Go tell them to stop.
Yeah.
Climb the mountain.
I mean, you can defend yourself against trespassers in a mountainous region much better than on a plain field.
Absolutely. But he mentions Singapore. Well, Singapore, he says, is an artificial authoritarian construct with stable demographics that forces integration and removes liberties to achieve social cohesion. And well, he did it very well, didn't he? The leader. I mean, I never hear anything bad about Singapore. I mean, the only things you hear that are quote-unquote bad are like, don't you know they whip people for breaking the law?
It reminds me of Milton Friedman. I think it was a quote by him who said, don't look at how people vote in elections. Look at how people vote with their feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely true. Speaking of which, though, going to some other diverse places that are doing well. I mean, there's the meme countries like Kuwait, where, yeah, incredibly diverse, but no one has citizenship. And the whole thing's being held up by the oil. As soon as that's gone, well, it's over. Are you really going to stay and fish for pearls? No one's doing that. But I did find a chart. It's a diversity scoreboard. of every country in the world. It's, it lists countries from most diverse to least diverse. I think only just like the top 50, if you scroll down and we'll get that like top 50 graph. It's not these texts here, but instead it has like a graph at the bottom. A chart, I should say, that one. So I suppose we'll read through. When you hear a country you're planning to move to in your life, or me, we'll stop it, I suppose. All right, number one, Papua New Guinea. Tanzania, Democratic Republic of the Congo. Uganda, Liberia, Cameroon, Togo, South Africa, Congo, Madagascar, Gabon. I'm not even going to read them. Somalia? Yugoslavia, well, that's gone. Ivory Coast, Chad, Indonesia's okay. Yeah. Mali, I love good war. Soviet Union, well, that's gone. Sudan, well, that cracked into two. Nepal, it's not bad. And we end up with Eritrea at the bottom there, the North Korea of Africa.
Mm.
I mean, I'm just going to say, I don't think ethnic homogeneity just suddenly brings about wealth. That's obviously ridiculous. But it does help with stability. I think that's demonstrably true.
I mean, there is, I think, an indirect correlation, because to have wealth, you need particular institutions, and you need the people who can be accustomed into particular institutions that produce wealth. We frequently have cases with where we had rich regions and rich countries and states that basically, after they changed their institutions, they weren't so rich anymore.
I'm just so sick of the denial, in the sense of the diversity is our strength, diversity is our strength. Trust me, it brings benefits. But then the idea that, well, if we didn't have that and instead had homogeneity, there are no benefits to that. No one ever speaks of it. And that's what's been playing on my mind. And also, as I mentioned, like, you destroy some empire that's based on ideology or the emperor, right? And what happens to the leftover lands? Well, they just kind of split off into ethnic states. It's like, what else were you expecting exactly? But we'll go to, because I mean, that was just some thoughts I had in my head, and I was like, I wonder if there's any research on this. So look it up. The Washington Post, of all places, actually did an article going over the data.
Yeah, I'm getting ready.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready.
You can see the map there. I think it's like the inverse of every map you've ever seen, where the green areas are not usually where the green is on the graph, but there we are. So this person says, I mapped the results above. And the greener countries, the more ethnically diverse, and the orange countries are more homogenous. There are a few trends you can see right away. Countries in Europe and Northeast Asia tend to be more homogenous. Sub-Saharan African nations are more diverse. 100% diverse, perhaps. The Americas are generally somewhere in the middle. And richer countries appear to be likely to be homogeneous. Homogeneous. Countries are richer. Yikes. In fact, the world's 20 most diverse countries are all African. There are likely many factors for this, although one might be the continent's colonial legacy. To be honest, I think it's entirely the colonial legacy, is the way Africa is. I mean, there are a couple of exemptions. I can never remember the goddamn names, but the two states that are just like enveloped by South Africa, was it Lesotho and the other one, whose name I forget? Like, they're the only two seemingly exemptions where whoever was in charge was just like, yeah, you get your own ethnostate.
Yeah.
There you are. And that's that. They don't have that instability there as a result. Anyway. But, some European overlords engineered ethnic distinctions to help them secure power. Most famously, the Hutu-Tutsi division in Rwanda, and they're stuck. European powers also carved Africa up into territories and possessions along lines with little respect to the actual people who live there. When Europeans left, the borders stayed. That's part of the African Union's mandate, forcing different groups into the same national boxes. You know how I was saying earlier that you'll get people criticizing evil whitey, the Europeans, because of the... Yeah.
Always.
How dare you make us so diverse? I thought diversity was a good thing. But we know we know that it's more complex than that. Obviously, if you have groups that are so ethnically diverse, they have nothing to do with each other. Why would you put them in the same nation and expect everything to go joyous? I mean, the Hutus and the Tutsis are really like the bottom end of things did not go joyous.
Yeah.
I think worse than Yugoslavia in that regard. And what I love is this person laying it out, and you can hear in their writing, they're just like, oh, yes, stupid Europeans, am I right? You say that when we speak of Africa, but whenever you speak of anywhere else in the world, they're like, oh, no, it's good. Trust me. Whatever. I also love that they phrase it like it's cruel.
It's just their voting block. It's just political expediency. They want to attract an audience. They think that the audience is going to like hearing it. And maybe if they're not very popular in their countries, they want to create another voting base.
Sure, but at the same time, you can tell the person writing that knows what the truth is. They don't feel any political correctness when speaking of Africa. There's no need to. And, well, they can see, hang on a minute, that didn't really help them in their development, did it? I was like, no, funny that. They also write, Japan and the Koreas are the most homogenous on Earth. Racial politics can be complicated and nasty in these countries, where nationalism and ethnicity have at times gone hand in hand, from Hirohito's Japan to Kim Il-sung's North Korea. The lack of diversity perhaps informs these politics, although it's tough to say which caused which. Which is a great example of why ethnic homogeneity isn't some kind of silver bullet, North Korea being the one there.
Yeah.
You may think, and correctly it is true, that North Korea is a socialist state and therefore has that as its founding principle, officially. But whenever you read about North Korea, you'll quickly find out that homogeneity is not by accident. Really not by accident. Race mixing is a big old crime in North Korea.
Yep.
If a North Korean defector goes into China and becomes pregnant with a half Korean, half Chinese baby, and then is found by the police or goes back to North Korea and is found, and they guess that the baby is mixed race, do you know what they do with a mixed race baby?
I think they are terminating it.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And it's not pretty either. It's not like the sanitized abortions of the West. They literally wait for it to be born and throw it in a pile, in which there are other babies just suffocating to death, this plastic box. It's horrific. There's actually a really funny, sort of funny story. There were some Cubans. They were doctors, right? And they were sent by the Cuban government as an act of socialist solidarity to North Korea. They arrived in North Korea, being Cuban. Skin tone wasn't exactly Korean.
Yeah.
There was a local crowd who apparently attacked them. They had North Korean guides with them, but still the crowd attacked them out of racial hatred. And they started a mini riot, according to the Cubans, who then complained about it. And the North Koreans were like, it won't happen again. Trust us. It's not some silver bullet. You, of course, have other things going on. But the thing that's holding back North Korea is obviously not homogeneity. It's communism. If you were having a guess, it might be something else. But it is also the most xenophobic nation on Earth. And that's because of the state that wants to keep it that way. So
it's the propaganda. That's where all of their propaganda is based.
Like, they actually have race nationalism as the founding tenets of the state. The actual state reason as to why the newest Kim has to be in charge, I don't know if you ever heard the story. The reasoning goes that for all of Korean history, the Korean race are the purest and the most trusting people in the world. They're the cleanest race.
You know what is weird? Because we always have with communists that they are allegedly internationalists.
Yeah.
They say that, you know, we're internationalists, we don't believe it. But whenever you come to the nitty-gritty, let's say, they always think that somehow they need to appeal to something other than absolute equality to bring people together.
North Korea especially, because of the influence of the Japanese. I don't have time for like a whole lecture about it. There's a guy who wrote a book about it called The Cleanest Race. It's a fantastic book. But he mentions in there so the reasoning is that North Koreans are the cleanest race because they're the most trusting, and this is why they've been taken advantage of by the evil Chinese and Japanese over the years, because they're so innocent. And then the American devils turned up.
It's
as well,
diversity is supposed to be the strength, but whenever we have diversity and weakness, it is something else's fault.
Sure, but in the North Korean case, the idea is that because they're the cleanest race and the most trusting and blah, 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 they get taken advantage of by these outside forces, which is why they need the dear leader, because he's the one protecting them from all these outside forces.
And is he also supposed to love them?
Yeah, and they love him.
Yeah.
There's actually some really creepy photos I've got to show you sometime. There's a lot of talk of the dear leader's bosom. Whole other thing. They write in here at the end, European countries are ethnically homogenous. This is, to me, one of the most interesting trends in the data. A number of now global ideas about the nation state, about national identity as tied to ethnicity, and about nationalism itself originally came from Europe. Yes. Why do you think Germany and Italy exist, for one? Literally no other reason for them to be in existence other than just, maybe we should unify the Germans, maybe we should unify the Italians. I mean, the early years of revolution there. For centuries, Europe's borders shifted wildly and frequently, only relatively recently settling into what we see today, in which most large ethnic groups have their own country to speak of. That developed painfully over a very long time. And while there are still some exemptions, Belgium has ethnic Walloons and Dutch, for example. In most of Europe, ethnicity and nationality are pretty close to the same thing. Yeah. I mean, the reason the Europeans shed so much blood during that, like, Concert of Europe period was about the ethnic states, the revolutions of that period.
Yeah.
And Belgium one is a really weird example to give up, because for people who don't know, the only reason Belgium exists is because of the British. We were like, we want a buffer state between Germany and France.
I didn't know that.
The only reason it exists.
I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah. It's why we call it a fake country. It's why Nigel Farage got in trouble for calling it a fake country. Because he was just like, you literally just exist because of politics. Yeah. You people aren't real. And so, yeah. And then you can get into the whole kingdom part of the United Kingdom as well. Yeah, yeah, we do have some ethnic mix up in the UK, but you can see it. You can see the borders. If you ever look up an ethnic map of the UK, you'll find it nice and easy. That's the reason we have independence movements today. Diversity and conflict. Internal conflicts appear on first blush to the more common greener countries, which make it some intuitive sense, given that groups with comparable stakes in their country's economics and politics might be more willing to be cooperative, perhaps, be able to compete, perhaps violently, over these resources. But there's enough data here to draw a lot of different conclusions. One thing is to keep in mind that ethnicity might not be static or predetermined. In other words, as in the case of Somalia, might be worsening economic conditions or war make people more likely to further divide along ethnic factions. I kind of love that. But yeah, you know the ethnic divisions within Somalia that turned it into, I don't know, battle royale before battle royale? Yeah, that's because of economics. It wasn't that the economics went bad and therefore the ethnic groups retreated into their own circles.
Okay.
The ethnic groups existed before the economic collapse.
I'm not very much aware of the economic practices in Somalia. I know I was watching some clips about the pirates and, you know, how they try to pirate tankers and stuff like that. But, yeah.
It's just weird. I'm running out of time, so I'll be real quick. They also say strong democracy correlates with ethnic homogeneity. Weird that. Then it goes to talk about the fractured societies, have more war. And then the paper's conclusion are that none of this matters. Really weird conclusion.
Why did you write it then?
I don't get it. I don't know if the authors went, hang on a minute, we're going to get in trouble. We're Americans. Like, this can't be said. They literally just go on to say it doesn't matter in general.
They said it, but they didn't. You know, it's like they need to have plausible deniability.
Yeah, they have this weird conclusion as well, where they try and justify everything they've just found away, where they say that when people persistently identify with a particular group, they form a potential interest groups that can be manipulated by politicians.
This is the worst attempt at winking.
It's so weird. Yeah. I just can't get over, like, don't you know that politicians are using the friction between the Irish and the English? Like, it's not English politicians running the IRA, mate. Like, no, these are organic things that come within the group. Whatever. But there you have it. The data, I think, is there. Something I've noticed, something I'm thinking about. Let me know what your thoughts are. Otherwise, that's that. Go to the video comments.
I just wanted to address Josh's take about being more welcoming to disillusioned leftists like that lefty Congress lady who got mugged and then started saying some mildly right-wing things. The problem is that not only are they being accepted, they're being given a leadership position at the table, which is how he got into this position in the first place, although I think he knows that. There was an old writer that addressed this, can't remember his name, who basically went, if a whore finds God and joins the parish, that's fine, but she can do stuff in the back rooms or whatever, but like, if she wants to lead the sermons, she's overstepping her bounds.
Ready?
Yeah,
I don't much to say on that, to be honest, so. Go to the next one.
I'm a fan of brevity and simplicity. My robots use simple principles applied uniquely to accomplish complex things. Little computer-controlled motors flip switches to control the big heavy-duty motors. So I turn my eye to the definition of woke. Simply put, woke is a white man's burden.
Someone's feeling edgy. But
I also like the pumpkin head on the machinery.
I was going to say, it's not Halloween, is it? Not for a long time as well. I suppose that's one of the old clips. Let's go to the ring comments. So, someone online says, emergency white pill. Utah has banned the sterilization and mutilization of children. Good. Yeah. God. Go to 2005 and tell people that would be a win for the riot.
What are you saying? What is that supposed to mean?
He's so right. I'm not making fun of you, someone online, but we've fallen so far. Sophie says they can invite anyone to that studio on the S-test. They can invite someone who lives in East Palestine. They can invite one of the black business owners who had their businesses burnt down during the Summer of Love. Could have invited a North Korean defector who had to feel real oppression. But no, the oppressed minority that we must all bow down and worship is that. This really just shows how removed the elites are from the real world, what their warped priorities are. It's nothing but rich, high-class, privileged humans who think vanity is the only thing that matters. It's a great point. There's a book written by a guy who was a North Korean defector. He got personally invited to the White House by George W. Bush, and George sat and read his whole book before he came.
Yeah.
And before that incident in which George brought him over, North Korean human rights were not a discussion about North Korea at all. It was just like, oh yeah, they also do some things. Like, no one cared about it at all. Now the fact that when you think of North Korea, you think of the gulags and the mistreatment is because of that guy and George Bush's interest in making sure that people knew. For all the things you can say about George Bush, he really did a good job on that. And when Biden is like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? Dylan Mulvaney. And it's just embarrassing by comparison. Just some quick ones. So Kevin Fox says, but there is a big difference between being gay and being gay, like Dylan. Certainly is. That's why I called it camp instead. It just reminds me of that world. George Happ says, the progressive woman kneeling in the image of a woman is a perfect image for that branch of feminism, the women plus. I don't think Mulvaney should be the target of ire. He's just an attention seeker and finally found something that works. Well, he's the face of the thing he wanted to be, so... Yeah. Let's go on to the Canadian stuff, if you want to read.
Okay, so Rue the Day. Criminalizing, within quotation marks, intimidation is literally the most tyrannical thing that can happen. It's not even thought crime, no. It's an ultimate vibe check. Exactly. They will put you away based solely on vibes. There is no way to know what vibes someone perceives you projecting, and there is no way to stop it. It's an ultimate carte blanche, resist it at all costs. Yes, and I think that this is a problem with leftists now, that they try to see everything as intimidation. There is no serious discussion about what counts as, let's say, hate or not, what counts as harm or not. Okay, Supreme Duck. Parents are now unsure. Unsure? It's obviously not safe. It's a pedo's den. You have to ask yourself, again, what is it with those clothes, especially the demon outfits? Weird. Connor Bolte. Aren't the Dylan Mulvaney... No, I think that was supposed to be for you. Okay. Kevin Fox. It's no different. This idea of we don't believe it, but we'll go along with it because we don't want to be cancelled is true on many fronts. The noticeable one is the migrant issue. If all those people saying refugees welcome do genuinely believe what they're espousing, why are they gathering in London, not in Kent, coast with mugs of tea and taking the refugees home? I think in a way that this is, in every society you have some degree of conformity and you have people who conform and they become in a sense normies, and when you have woke ideologues who go in, they barge in and they try to set the terms of discussion, most people will buy into this. So, Brandon Toms. Those Canadian cops have the aesthetics of Chads. They're pseudo-Chads. Recall that same image of the Uvalde police department, all suited up in SWAT gear looking all tough, but not tough enough to go in and save children from being murdered. Thomas Howell. Guys, can we all agree that the definition of woke is religious adherence to the current thing? Yeah, sort of. Alpha of the Betas. Canada is ruled by the weakest, most entitled and degenerate class of elites in this nation's history. The same people who got PTSD from honking will jail you for protesting their grooming, almost as fast as they'll jail you for protesting your loss of bodily autonomy. You want to go to the true diversity has never been tried?
Sure. So just real quick. Someone says the Geo lecture was super interesting. Next time, warn us so we can keep notes. Will do. Brandon Thomas says, don't forget about the diversity of India. It was so diverse and so strong and also so diverse that Britain had to come in and separate them. Am I wrong? I mean, the funny thing there is they separated themselves. And even then, it's still... I mean, like, Pakistan's my best example for this. What was it? The guy who got kicked out, Salman Rushdie, he does a great speech on just... His question for the speech is, why does Pakistan exist? He doesn't answer it because there's no answer to it. It's just, it's like Belarus. It's just like, I don't really understand.
Is he? I don't think he's from there. But maybe, okay, let's leave that.
I can't remember the top of my head, but he just went through like the ethnic divisions within Pakistan. I mean, the only reason it exists is just, again, because fiction on Islam.
Yeah.
Just like, well, we'll have Islamic State. I mean, like, you've got Balochistan in the south still fighting for independence between Afghan, Pakistan, and Iran.
Yeah. It says Indian-born British-American novelist. Yeah.
Well, I mean, then you also have the whole East-West Pakistan thing before that.
Yes.
Which is just a double, like, this doesn't make any sense. Oh, but they're both Muslims. Yeah, but one's Bangladeshi. Like, the ethnicity became more important than fiction.
It's always division.
Anyway, we're out of time, but yeah. That's something I've been thinking about. Let me know. More from us. Come back Monday.
Have a lovely weekend.
1:30? Do we start at 1:30? When do we start this podcast usually?
One.
There we are. 1 p.m. I completely forgot. Monday. There we are. Bye.